The rougher fights between Governors Nyesom Wike and Godwin Obaseki, the leadership tussle around the ruling APC, to the slap debacle in Anambra. The past week gave us some very big talking points. But the energy crisis, which we're still dealing with, is something we honestly cannot stop talking about. And that is how I welcome you to another super bumper edition of The Newsroom, a program, of course, put together by the Nigeria Info Newsroom, where we get to discuss and give you all the backstory, all of the analysis, every big thing that maybe we are unable to tell you through our 5, 10 or possibly 15 minutes news bulletin. That's what we'll do here right on the show. A very good evening to you, Nigeria, Lagos precisely. My name is Ufuma Egbamuna. I'm just one half of your anchors this evening, because I've got the man who actually used the term that I stole in my intro, rougher. I've got him right here, Algo Obo. Algo, a very good evening to you and welcome to the show.
Shakumaku to you.
No, today is rougher. Today is not Shakumaku.
Rougher to you.
Well, definitely we will talk about that rougher fight, because it was one of the big stories from the past weekend, Nyesom Wike versus Obaseki. We'd also talk about the APC leadership tussle and look forward to, of course, what's going to happen this weekend when they have the convention. And there's absolutely no way we are not going to talk about Professor Chukwuma Soludo, who took his oath of office last week, and then the big controversy, Ebelechukwu versus Bianca, right there in Anambra. And then, of course, we will talk about NURTW. It is still a big issue. And joining us on the show this evening, we have got the executive director of the Electoral College Nigeria, who's also going to be looking at some of the stories we have for you today. His name is Kunle Lawal, and Kunle actually had to bribe someone to make sure he's on the show today. Kunle, very good evening to you.
Good evening. It's a pleasure to be in Lagos.
Okay. Yes. How's Abuja, by the way?
Fine, thank you.
Okay, he's just a newcomer, so to speak, to Lagos. We're also expecting PDP strategist Demola Rewaju, who will be joining us any moment from now. He just told me over the phone that he's close by. And then, of course, we've got our reporters who also will be giving us backstories to some of the news reports we covered on the show this evening. I've got Precious Nnenna Okon, who's also making another return to the show. Precious, good evening to you.
Good evening.
Say that again.
Good evening, Lagos.
Okay. Well, Precious, you really didn't have so much time last time around, last week, because time was so not on our side. So we'll try and do justice to that. Well, our first story today on the show has got to be what you and I have been feeling over the past 1 month. It is the energy crisis. Well, it started... The last 2 months has been quite horrific for us Nigerians. First, we experienced the adulterated petrol issue, which of course caused a lot of scarcity from Lagos to Abuja to Port Harcourt. In fact, some cities are still experiencing it. And then, of course, just when we thought that was over, the Russia-Ukraine war, you know, increased the petrol issue. And then diesel increase in price, and we thought that was just enough. Well, last week the national grid collapsed, not once but twice in a space of 2 days. Well, what was the result? I'm sure in your homes it was chaos. Yes, that's what we have actually seen. It got so bad that industrialist Tony Elumelu actually came on Twitter and did a rant. I'll just give you excerpts from that rant he put out. He said, "This morning, I am listening to my colleagues at the office bemoan the very pressing issues they face every day in this country and how things have been getting worse and worse. No electricity for 5 days, hikes in the price of diesel, frightening food inflation, and so on and so forth." He then says, How can a country so rich in natural resources have 90% of its citizens living in hardship and poverty? I've often said that the access to electricity is critical for our development, alleviation of poverty and hardship. And speaking of security, our people are afraid. He also went on to say businesses are suffering. How can we be losing over 90% of oil production to thieves? Well, talking about businesses, we did, you know, put out a report last week about how some businesses have been suffering as a result of the energy crisis we actually have. And one of the reporters who actually covered that story is right here in the studio. Precious Nnenna Okon has been speaking to some business owners. Nnenna, what have they been telling you?
Okay, so last week, Tuesday, I visited some stores on the island, and when I got there, you could see that was around 10 o'clock, 10 in the morning. When I got to the plaza, you could see that most of them, if not all, their doors were open because there was no light, and so everywhere was stuffy, hot. So most of them, they have resorted to opening their doors, and not only that, a number of them do not have. Cannot afford to get fuel for their generator
because of the scarcity, obviously.
Yes, because of the scarcity. Oh. And so they were just there looking, and then some of them also complained that it has affected their sales. Oh. So when customers come in and they find that everywhere is hot, they are not comfortable, it's very inconveniencing for customers, and then some of them have to go out. Then on Thursday, I also spoke to somebody that runs a frozen food business.
Yep.
That sells chicken, fish, and you could tell from her voice that she was frustrated. She kept talking about what does the country want? What does the country want? What do the leaders want us to do? You know, the price of diesel now, they've resorted to getting black markets.
Yeah, of course. Prices have tripled and all of that.
Yes, in fact, she even said that she's wondering if people are no longer interested in eating chicken because of the increase in price of diesel. When they even eventually get to buy it, they've also increased the price of their frozen
food.
Product. Yes,
and of course, customers are complaining.
Yes, customers are complaining.
Okay, well, not a sorry sight. And our God, even for us, who at home, those of us not doing businesses, I'm not even a businessman, I can't even contemplate doing business, it's not my thing.
Yeah.
No power at home, no electricity at home, so we can't charge our phones.
Yeah.
We can't even watch TV, the heat is madness. How have we coped over the last couple of weeks?
Absolutely, the big question. How we've managed is a miracle that we've been able to go through this entire thing. But one thing it just puts into our mind now is if you had any doubts that Nigeria was a nation which was powered by diesel and petrol, you got the answer now that NEPA, that should have been the backup. You see, I didn't change the name for PHCN to NEPA because nothing has really changed. They're still in the equation, the small boys, and haven't been able to live up to expectation. But Kunle is executive director of the Electoral College, and just listening to Nnenna. I mean, over the weekend, Kunle, I saw big company after big company send emails that this is a consequence of the diesel shortage. The high cost of diesel. We are going to see how we're going to cut operating cost as well as reduce our working hours, and begin to do the maths and the calculation of what this impact will have on the general society. But if the big companies are feeling the pain to the point you had Tony Lumilu rant on social media, what about the everyday man and woman on the street?
You know, if we're going to look at this thing, it's best to look at it from a holistic solution. So there's no need getting emotional about it. We put ourselves in this position.
Yeah.
And being clear, we put ourselves in this position. Nigeria has enough liquefied natural gas to power West Africa at will.
Mm.
Nigeria has refused and has been flaring it. That's the first problem.
Yeah.
Second problem is that we're more concerned about generation than we are about distribution. If you go into Nigeria's entire system, you find out that transmission has always been a problem. So our wires cannot transmit more than 5,000 megawatts across our substations.
Mm.
And then we also have another part of the act which formulates the NERC, that's National Electricity Regulatory Commission.
Yeah.
And within that act, which it stands for, you cannot generate more than 1 megawatt without transferring it back to the national national grid, and then for it to be transferred all over Nigeria. Now, at this point, it means that if you generate, let's say Shell in Port Harcourt is deciding to want to provide electricity to a particular community and they generate more than 1 megawatt, the excess is being diverted back to the closest power dam and then sent back. A lot of power is lost in that
process.
We also have decided that even though we pay an NM, a functional NMPC staff, I don't think Kaduna has produced one drop of oil since 2017. The rest are not really conversant with their time. So we created the sham we live in and we've been comfortable with it. I think the real big major problem or bane of everything that we're dealing with comes down to the question, do we really care about anything? The country cannot work on remote control. And at this part, we ourselves are guilty of the same things we're accusing the government of. I believe everybody is guilty and every Nigerian is guilty in this. Because the truth is, we've not even questioned our government. We've not held the government accountable. We've also decided to benefit of the corruption. I think, was it in Rivers State? It's someone in a security agency, I can't remember which one, was caught by the governor actually being part of those illegally bunkering oil. If you have that kind of situation, which you have a lot of Nigerians participating in, then you ask yourself the question, how is Nigeria supposed to move forward? Come on, we're all guilty.
The honest truth is that if we get into that conversation about oil bunkering and all of that, we probably might not leave the studio this evening. So we're going to move on, but we're still talking the energy crisis. And of course, thankfully, he is here. I did introduce him at the start of the show. Possibly traffic must have held him up. We've got Demola Rewaju in the building. Demola, a very good evening to you.
Good evening, Ifeoma.
It's good to see you finally.
It's good to see you guys.
Oh, okay. So, of course, the energy crisis got so frustrating bad last week that our anchor, Nigeria Info's Sandra Ezekwesili, show host for the program that just finished before we came on Hard Facts, she vented her frustrations on Twitter last week, you know, talking about how the present government have actually failed. Well, someone just did not like it at the villa. That person happens to be the president's aide, Tolu Ogunlesi, who felt that he needed, you know, to fact check Sandra. Well, Demola, I'm going to ask you, many people interpreted Tolu's response, you know, to a question of, well, my own bad, no better pass PDP bad, so to speak, you know, trying to make comparisons about how it was worse during the PDP era than what it is right now. What do you make of the situation we've actually found ourselves?
I think for me, there's the technical angle to the problem, which Kunle has done a lot in highlighting, but there's also the political angle to the problem, which is the fact that we have to understand that at the very heart of it, the present government in power is a pseudo-socialist government that does not understand how capitalism works. And that government does not understand the plan. If left to these guys, what they would do is they would reverse the entire distribution, transmission, and generation processes, you know, and revert everything back to government. Let government go on and start to administer that process back. They'll create NEPA all over again and try to administer it from the center. We've seen them do this in so many other sectors, or make attempts to do it, even for the fact that, you know, Nigeria has moved on. Within that 16 years where PDP was in power, Nigeria has moved on into becoming a very, very capitalist country.
Okay.
But of course, you know, these are guys who still want to roll it back and try to inject government into every sector. Mm. Now, the entire energy sector, the moves were started, you know, under previous PDP administrations to privatize. You were going to do the first phase, which was the generation companies, the GenCos were going to come up. The transmission company, I think initially was going to be sold to Manitoba, but then eventually I think something went wrong at that point, and that was still in the hands of the government. Transmission should have gone. It should have been privatized by now. The same thing with distribution also. I think even the discos, yes, you have the discos, which is fine. But the problem remains the fundamental ideology of the government. There's still too much government interference. And of course, you know, the average capitalist, capitalists are capitalists in any system, okay? Now, if capitalists are operating in a socialist system, like in Russia, for example, what they would do is they would go to the government like vampires and tell the government, look, let us bleed off the state. So you have capitalist oligarchs who are operating within the Russian system, even though the Russian system is a socialist system. Mm. But you have capitalists who will go to the... So now, what the capitalists who own these companies are doing with this pseudo-socialist government is that they are working in cahoots with government. And sometimes they work in cahoots with government to increase tariffs on electricity. We've seen 2 electricity tariffs, you know, under this government so far. Ordinarily, the plan was in the act, you know, that facilitated the entire privatization process. The multi-year tariff order was put in that you cannot increase prices until after every 5 years. And so it was going to be every 5 years. But we've seen 2 happen just recently under this past government. So what they are doing is they are collaborating with the government in order to fleece the Nigerian people. And so Nigerian government is not able to curb them. Nigerian government is not able to hold them to task when they do not meet the set standard
that they should have them.
Where they should be by now, because I remember very well that in the discussions that preceded that, there were targets given to everybody. That look, by so-so time, it was an entire plan for the electricity situation in Nigeria. That by so-so year, this is what we should be doing. By so-so year, this is what we should be doing. This is what government should have done. But rather than doing that, government is not doing that. What government is taxing these guys. These guys are paying the government, and government is supporting them in everything they do.
A terrible situation, I have to say. This is probably a discussion would maybe sit down and have an hour. I'm sure Sandra and Algo has actually done a lot, you know, in fact, last week Friday, you actually talked to Peter Sele, the former TUC president, and of course, Sam Amadi, the former chairman of NERC. It was a lengthy discussion. So let's move on quickly now, and let's move on to story 2. And in story 2, we're going to be talking about what a lot of Lagosians have been talking about for the last couple of weeks, the drama in the NURTW. Well, we had the Commissioner of Information, Gbenga Omotosho, on the Morning Crossfire last week, Tuesday, if my memory serves me right. And he spoke a lot, you know, about some of the issues in the NURT. I would just like to play some of those interviews. Well, he did talk about the fact that you know, the state, the state minister of transportation will investigate some of the issues in terms of NURT collecting money, you know, and all of that. He also talked about the fact that government, that's the Lagos state government, has, you know, enacted some measures that would solve that problem. Let us take a listen to Gbenga Omotosho speak on the measures that government has put in place.
No, if there is something going on, the case that you have just mentioned, I do not think that type of parallel that you are trying to draw from NURT people harassing vehicle owners, you are using their vehicles for taxi cabs or something, and then somebody who is believed to have suspected to have kidnapped a baby. Those are 2 parallels that don't meet at all. But all I'm saying is that if you say NURTW people, they go on the road, harass private car owners who are trying to use their vehicles or kabu-kabu or nothing, so the government should go in there and investigate that. I do not think if it's something that is so common, the government will know about it and moving there, and then you know, wherever is assaulting anybody, it becomes a very serious case, not just a case of somebody saying he wants to come on the road to collect union dues. You collect dues from only members of your union, not any other person. Most of the vehicles that NURTW people own, they are even painted. So the distinction is clear. So anybody who is driving his own car and using it for commercial purposes, and people say they are of the union and they are trying to disturb such people, let us encourage them to escalate such matters. Let us encourage them to report to law enforcement agencies, and then you see the kind of action that we follow.
Well, that was Gbenga Omotosho, Lagos State Commissioner for Information and Strategy, speaking to our own Wemimo Adewuni last week on the Morning Crossfire. Ademola, is this actually a restructuring of the NURTW in Lagos?
I think it is. It is more of the same, basically. I mean, look, when Bola Tinubu was governor, towards the end of his second term, there were crises all over the place in the different drivers' union. And the Lagos State Ministry of Transportation came out and they accredited three drivers' unions in Lagos State. One was NURLTW, the second was RTEAN, Road Transport Employers Association of Nigeria, and the third was SECTAN, Self-Employed Commercial Drivers Association of Nigeria. Now, those three were licensed, but they favored NURLTW because they had guys in NURLTW who were the enforcement arm of their political party.
That's not an accusation. Do you have facts to back it up?
Well, I mean, look. Every fight that has happened, especially the ones that happened on Lagos Island, the fight between one of the members called Sego and then the treasurer of the NURLTW called Kunle Poli. Kunle Poli ended up being the one arrested. And before he was arrested, Kunle Poli was saying that, look, it's because of the internal crisis we are having. It's because this guy who's my opponent, MC Olomo, is more aligned to the state government. You know, he's more aligned to the cabal that brought in the state government presently. And that's why they are able to have me in jail. Mm. And, you know, Kunle Poli, he has been transferred from Kirikiri to somewhere else just because, you know, someone feels that he is a threat. Already we know where this would likely end. The first move was made. The national body of the NURLTW came. Because, look, even the guy himself, MC Oluomo, should not be the chairman of that organization. The last man who was there, Agbede, he did not supervise the election that produced MC Oluomo. But because somebody felt MC Oluomo, look, he has been a treasured son of our political cabal. And that's why. Well, basically, everything going on is simply because of the political shenanigans happening within the APC. And Lagosians already know where this thing will end. Anybody who has been keeping an eye on that sector knows that what would happen is that MC Oluomo will be brought in somehow to manage the parks, you know, he'll be brought in to manage the parks. I mean, the man already pulled out his own he pulled out the entire NURLTW.
Which brings me to the question, and I asked this jokingly last week. Do you think this factionalization of the NURLTW is the prelude to the fight for 2023?
It's a part of it. I think there's a national dimension to it. People want to clip Bola Tinubu's wings, and they know that, you know, this is a part of... MC Oluomo was with them, you know, when they went. I mean, we all saw the video. I think we should have all seen the video during the last Osun State election where MC Oluomo was in Oshogbo and making threats about Kwara, that, you know, they're going to deal with the Kwara State governor, the former Kwara State governor, then the Senate President Saraki. Mm. That was MC Oluomo himself. You know, wherever APC is having their thing, he's always there. So it's... all politics, basically. But what it again shows is that the Lagos State government is not aligned fully with the people of Lagos. Because from the response that Mr. Gboyega Omotosho was bringing up, he was being asked about NURLTW harassing people driving their vehicles innocently. I mean, we all know these things happen.
Well, he did. To be fair to him, he did talk about the fact in that interview that all of those complaints will be investigated. And he also gave numbers, you know, that people can call in, you know, to actually report those issues.
I would round up by saying MC Oluomo has constantly been a thorn in the sides of Nigerian commuters, him and his gang. Yes, of course, you know, he now has a measure of he has an air of respectability around him. Mm. He's now the chairman. But there are a lot of people within the NURLTW structure who harass people. You know, you put your logistics bike on the road, they are trying to collect levies from them. Mm. We had recently, the most open case was where Lagos State made an announcement and said that drivers in Lagos State will be paying a fixed sum per year.
800 naira per
day. MC Oluomo immediately stood up and said that is 800 naira for the state government. It doesn't have anything to do with my own. That they will still be collecting their own dues. In other words, as you are paying your tax to the government, right, Remember there's another government within the...
Kukule, you wanted to say something quickly.
Yeah, for someone who has lived across Nigeria, I'm new to Lagos. I just moved to Lagos. I don't understand how an association is more powerful than a state government, except you have remotely given them access to power. For me, that is the most... I don't understand it. It's the most redundant and backward political scenario I can ever imagine. Right. An NURLTW talking to a state government. When did that start?
The irony.
It's only available in southern Nigeria. Trust me. It cannot happen in northern Nigeria. This is no feds or anything.
Yeah,
no one understands what I'm saying. In Abuja, that is not possible. Everybody will sleep in jail.
Exactly,
no, I heard you joking. So I don't understand. So I just moved to Lagos. And all of a sudden, I find out that NURLTW is as strong as the military. I'm like, what?
Welcome
to Lagos.
The irony is, you ask anyone who's vying for office, ask them the question whether they will scrap NURLTW or down for you, will get a mute response, no matter what divide they belong to. But there's another controversial issue I'm going to bring Kunle and Demola to. This is about the Lagos toll. The Ekoyi Link Bridge is back, and Lagosians are not happy with the announcement, saying that it will reopen 18 months after the suspension of tolling. They feel, though, state government lacks the empathy by making the announcement at this time. So the state government is defending its decision to start collecting toll at the Lekki toll link bridge. So once again, Commissioner for Information, Gbenga Motosho, was asked a question on Jimmy Disu's Daily Digest, saying that the government is yet to refund the money it borrowed from the local and international lenders for the bridge's construction as number one reason why they have to have that bridge up and running again, the toll in particular. The second, he says, the closure has affected 500 people who work with the Lekki Concession Company who manage the day-to-day running of the toll also too. So here is Gbenga Motosho again on the toll resumption of tolling.
And that road was built at about 44.9 billion. The government went to raise money to build the road. As of today, Lekki Concession Company is owing about 11.6 billion naira to local lenders and international lenders, including African Development Bank. They are being owed $31.1 million. Apart from that, there are 500 workers, at least 500 workers working in that place. Most of them young people with young families. For 18 months, they have not had a cover. Some of them have earned half salary. But they need to return to their job so that they can get back to their normal life.
Oh, all right. There you have Gbenga Motosho. And I'm going to come to you, Demola, on this one. The Commissioner for Information talks about debts that need to be paid. The PDP's chieftain here, Bode George, says it's about helping Tinubu's 2023 presidential plan.
Absolutely.
You're going to say absolutely. I can't imagine anything else.
The state government last year, the executive arm of the state government sent 1.3 trillion budget proposal to the House of Assembly. And the House of Assembly single-handedly increased it from 1.3 trillion, not to 1.4, not to 1.5, not to 1.6, but all the way to 1.758 trillion. They added 400 billion. That's a 27% increase. What exactly would the executive arm are forgotten to include in the budget in terms of capital projects that they forgot to include in the budget to the tune of 400 billion that the State House of Assembly had to. And, you know, our party came out to react and say, look, this is most likely they are trying to siphon money for somebody's presidential ambition in 2023. And look, we know how much they've been losing. In this entire thing, they are quoting statistics, 500 workers are not being paid. I mean, those workers can be absorbed into one of their many ministries. You have Ministry of Trade and Establishment that has about 86 associations, I believe, under them, where they dole money out every December and so on and so forth. They can absorb those ones there. But the entire thing around that Lekki LCC, is LCC... is it a private company or is it an agency of the state? They will tell you it's a private company. What is the tune of the investment of the state, you know, in LCC? Nobody has been able to unravel that. Because initially when the LCC was founded, it was founded as a state, as a private vehicle to construct the Lekki Road, the Lekki Ekpe, to add one lane to the Lekki Ekpe Road, because that road itself was built by the government of Alhaji Latif Jakonde. They added one lane to it, put a fence around it, and began to toll that road. They put the first toll gate, put the second toll gate. The monies that they are not collecting there, they are trying to shore up that money. There's definitely a revenue shortfall. But what Lagosians should be asking is this: what exactly are we paying taxes for? We are paying taxes on almost everything. In Lagos State, we pay, and I'm sure Kunle would by now be finding this out, there's consumption tax. I think other places have started copying it also to the tune of 7.5%.
Really?
If you go to Mr. Biggs, if you go to, sorry to mention names, but if you go to any eatery basically in Lagos State, there's that 7.5% percent consumption tax that you pay as a Lagosian for eating in Lagos. So every Lagosian is paying taxes in different ways. Why should we be taxed again to use the roads that were built by our money? You say you borrowed that money. How much exactly did you borrow? What percentage is it growing by?
But you heard the commissioner mention the figures. He did mention the figures.
Wait. You know why his figures not come into play? Lagos' present debt profile, according to the DMO, is $1.38 billion as of now.
Okay.
So I don't know why 11 billion naira is so important. If you want to raise that money, really, go to Apapa and raise it. How many things do you have gridlocked there? We are aware of the money they are raising there. Lagos is the most multi-taxed, because now Lagos is funny. What I've noticed with Lagos is that first the state taxes you, then the local government taxes you. You're asking me to pay taxes for radio airwaves. Look,
okay, Kule, we would have to leave it there because again, we do not have so much time on our side. Quickly, let's move on to the third topic we have on the show, and it's got to do with, of course, the oath of office that Professor Chukwuma Soludo took last week. Now, sadly, instead of the conversation last week to be all about the speech made by the governor, which I thought was quite brilliant, you know, the plans that he had, all of the conversations last week more or less just centered on the wife of the former Biafra leader, Bianca Ojukwu, and of course the wife of now former governor, Ebelechukwu Obiano. But we'll try and make it a little different on the show this evening. We'll try to, of course, talk about that speech as little as we can. And joining us on the show from our station in Onitsha, Anambra State, is Nigeria Info reporter Kenechukwu Ofoma. Kenechukwu, a very good evening to you.
Yeah, very good evening to you, Foma. And how do you do?
Well, I'm doing well. Demola and Kunle are giving me enough things to make me smile right here in the studio. But quickly, let's talk about Professor Chukwuma Soludo last week. Well, he did talk about the fact that he was not going to spend a lot of monies on extravagant parties that really did not matter, that he wasn't going to be celebrating, that he had done, you know, all of the Thanksgiving that needed to be done and the parties that needed to be done before that last week. But what I actually found interesting, you know, is the fact that he came up with his plans. He talked about the fact that he's got Anambra Vision 2070, a 50-year development plan. He talked about the fact that he's got the Soludo Solution. He also talked about the Transition Committee report, which was a combination of the first two that I mentioned. Then he also looked at five key pillars: law and order, economic transformation, competitive and progressive social agenda, governance, rule of law, you know, and of course, tackling the environmental problem, which is a big issue in Anambra. Kenechukwu, you have actually spoken to a number of persons after the inauguration. How are they reacting to the governor's speech?
Okay, yes, I've, like you say, spoken with quite a number of persons, and one of them being former governor, two-term governor of Anambra State, Mr. Peter Obi. In his view, the decision of incumbent governor, Professor Chukwuma Soludo, to focus on key areas, the ones you earlier mentioned, I don't want to go through them again, you know, shows that he has the interest of the people at heart. Take, for instance, education. Education, we all know the role it plays in breaking the barrier between the poor and the rich. Former Governor Peter Obi was quick to commend him for that. He also made it specific that for Professor Soludo, Mr. Governor, like he would like us to address him, for him to have chosen to make his social contract with the Anambra clear in terms of that blueprint, that development agenda, which he called Soludo Solution, is something commendable because it gives people the instruments to hold government to account when they begin to fail or renege on, you know, some of the promises they made. I also spoke with Professor Bass Otomi. We all know him, and he talked about Soludo's plans, welfarist plans for the Anambra. He also talked about what he spoke to fiscal responsibility, which is the reason why, you know, of course, the former governor of Anambra, the immediate past governor of Anambra State, is being,
investigated
around the doors of the EFCC, you know, and he said every kobo of the Anambra resources must count. He mentioned earlier, he said there will be no time for celebration until a whole lot of things he outlined in his agenda
will be sorted out. Okay, Kenechukwu, just a second. Hold on, we'll still come back to you in a bit. Kunle, we've heard these promises over and over and over again. How will the Anambra people be able to hold Governor Soludo accountable?
Well, as I've seen, he's running quite an open government. He even started something which shocked me. I think I saw the governor's car the first day, you know, he was just inaugurated, and he's used, a made in Nigeria car, an assembled in Nigeria car. So he He didn't wait for a week to jump into doing exactly what he wanted to do. And as much as the governor would like to say, of course, his hands are not in some things, we also know that the stop of one escaping Texan already shows that he's ready to pull down what went down within finances preceding him. It shows a very, very I'll tell you, Soludo has, I'm looking at a number right now, I wish I was from that state. He showed me clearly what governance could be. I know right now I'm ready to decamp.
Charles Soludo is a man for the moment. I think his leadership is coming at a point where a lot of people feel that, you know, there's a death of leadership in the Southeast. And people like Soludo understand, you know, what is required of them. He understands that he's the man of the moment. I think one, the fact that, you know, he won his election. He wasn't in any of the big parties. He wasn't in APC. He wasn't in PDP.
But
he
was in Abga, the biggest party, you could say, in Anambra.
In Anambra.
Yep.
Yes, but you know, but he himself, I mean, it shows that the source of his power basically is the people.
The people.
He has to endear himself
to the people.
Okay. And he's poised to do that.
Well, there's no way we're going to have this conversation without talking about that slap. Bianca versus Ebele Chukwu. Kenechukwu, you're still on, right?
Okay.
Well, I'm trying not to laugh, but I can't help it. You were there when it all went down. Can you just capture quickly in 30 seconds the mood of what it was like just after the slap?
I'll simply say embarrassment, surprise, you know, from guests. And all of a sudden, a serene moment, you know, that was at that point, you know, at its ebb. You know, where the governor was being sworn in, was turned into a very chaotic situation. Where, of course, when I saw was the wife of the former governor trying to redress her wig that was practically pulled off her hair by the wife of
Warlord. Was it what do they call it again? Help us here. Was it Brazilian hair?
I would not know.
Well, that's on a lighter note. Thank you very much, Kenechukwu, for joining us on the newsroom this evening.
Thank you very much.
Okay, quickly, that takes us to a story 4. And Kunle, I'm coming to you on this one. The APC drama over the last 2 weeks. Buni is the APC chairman. No, he's not Buni. It's Abubakar Bello. No, the president is writing a letter warning all the APC members, hey, y'all have to sit up. And then, of course, Buni came back. He's now the chairman. Senator Akpan Odoedere tried to change some of the decisions Bello had made. He reversed it. Just so much of drama. But quickly, how does the success or failure of the convention of the APC, which is scheduled for this Saturday, how does it affect the average Nigerian listening to the newsroom this evening?
The success of the convention.
Success or failure of it. How does it affect
Nigeria?
Yes. Okay. What concerns them with APC and their national convention?
No, the truth about it is we must give them the regard that they are the incumbent party in power. But we must also be conversant with the fact that right, whenever there's a transition of power, and this happened in 2011, just a lot of us, the news media was not as loud. But exactly when there's going to be no president and there's going to be a new president coming out, I remember when Obasanjo was trying to hand over to Yar'Adua, there was this fracas all over within the PDP. It's the same thing that's going on within the APC. But this time it comes with a bigger twist. One generation feels the other generation should get out. And it's the funny thing is most people want to say, it's the younger ones. No, it's not even the younger ones. The ones that have been ministers and governors appeal. Okay, guys, you older ones, carry your wala. So the fight hasn't even reached. The demon has not reached our own. The fight is your
own. Well, there's a fight. Somehow.
All boils down to somebody's presidential ambition. And I wouldn't mention his name naturally. I'll just probably one guy that has been governor of Lagos since 1999. Because Lagos has only had one governor since 1999.
Right. Really?
Yes.
Well, I don't know about that.
I'm going to have to stop you there, Kunle. Okay, because how time flies when you're having a good discussion.
I swear.
But I'm going to leave Demola with the last one, and this is with the governor of Edo State and the governor of River State, incidentally both of them from the same party. They entertained us over the last week, over the back and forth.
You are a betrayer!
Serial betrayer. So what do you have to say about that very quickly, whether this infighting within the PDP will affect its 2023 takeover ambitions?
No. I don't see it affecting.
You're sure?
No, I don't see it affecting. It's every other thing you see happening in PDP is mostly conflicts that happen in politics. You know, somebody wants to go this way, somebody wants to go that way. You know, people just trying to align and realign, basically. But of course, you know, what I like about the exchange was that the National Working Committee, the National Chairman stepped in, Iyocha Ayu, visited Edo and told both of them, basically, you know, you cannot behave this way. This is not representative of the party. But, you know, I mean, the fact that we've known that this thing has been brewing for a while. Some of us have known that it had been brewing. Mm. You know, the structure, the PDP structure in Edo State has not felt comfortable
with the governor.
And the governor too has been making moves. But regardless, you know, Governor Wike is somebody who doesn't hide how he feels about something. When he supported this man, he supported him with his full chest.
Mm.
And now that he's against the man, he also is also against him with his full chest. But that does not, you know, excuse whatever was said. Governor Baseki is a governor too in his own right. He's a second term governor in his own right too. And he also has a right to
say what he wants.
To say what he wants to say about what happens, the politics of Edo State.
Okay, so, quickly, let's just take a few of the thoughts before we wrap up the show because time not so on our side. Demola, one of your namesakes is saying, no one is asking you to pay taxes in local government. It's a constitutional thing. Radio and television licenses are the constitutional right of the local government. And that's from Demola. We also have another comment here. Tolu Ogunlesi pathetically based his APC being better than PDP in energy provision by looking at the number of crashes of the national grid in the past and now. Cherry picking indices. All we need to do is look at how much power is being generated and transmitted, and you realize that we've just been going round in circles. We need at least 200,000 megawatts of power to power Nigeria. And that's from Alex Ogundadigbe from Otain Ogun State. It is, we have less than 2 minutes to the top of the hour. Your last words in 10 seconds.
Okay, yes. I'd like to answer Demola, who of course does not understand the constitution probably.
Five seconds.
Probably, yes. So, multiple government has right over tax, but when tax is multiple, it's infringing, especially where it infringes on state and personal to one individual, it's infringing on the basic foundation of the constitution.
Demola, your final thoughts?
I'll let Kunle finish his thought with my last 10 seconds.
Basically, we need to understand the constitution. The state can tax, but at every point, we must remember that the federal constitution is supreme. And at that point, the federal constitution is supreme. Local government and state can tax concurrently on an individual. It's infringing on the person's rights.
Well, on that note, we're going to wrap up the newsroom this evening. August said it all. How time flies when you're having fun. Thank you to Kunle Lawal, the Executive Director of the Electoral College Nigeria. And of course, PDP strategist Demola Rewaju. I've had our reporters, Precious Nnenna Okon, who was here in the studio. And of course, Kenechukwu Ofoma, who joined us from Awka. My name is Ufumeigbe Amuno. I've done this with Aoga Obo. Stay tuned. The news at 7 comes up.